the P5, the G5, or a neutral site game in Council Bluffs, the Bill King Show has it covered.
Griff is with us every Tuesday. Mike Griff is AJC's Dog Nation. Griff, before we get to the game and some of that, there was news overnight that James Franklin has switched from Trace Armstrong to Jimmy Sexton. And I was commenting, Griff, I don't really know Jimmy Sexton. He was supposed to call me one time to yell at me. He was mad at me about something. And Tommy Dienhart gave him my number because he wanted it, and I never heard from him. But you, I think you've told me you know Jimmy some. You've dealt with him some, right?
Yeah, I've dealt with Jimmy.
What's he like?
I mean, he's charismatic, big personality, intelligent guy, gets to the point. You know, exactly what you would expect a super agent kingpin to be like.
So when James Franklin makes that switch, is this posturing? I know you haven't talked to James, but what do you think his angle is? More money? A new job?
Yeah. I mean, Butch Jones made the move also from Trace to Jimmy, albeit a little too late at Tennessee. Probably would have had an extension in hand if he'd done that a year earlier. But, it does seem like scouts are a bit more regional. That doesn't mean that they can only recruit to their region. But, that's an indication that maybe Franklin's interested in getting back into the SEC. Maybe at Penn State he can't get it done. I mean, he's been there a while now. He's come close. He's built a good program. Or maybe he just got sideways with Trace and doesn't like his current deal. But, I also thought that maybe this could be related to the, pending LSU opening. Maybe James is disappointed that he's not at the forefront of that. Or maybe he wants to be. I mean, we can suppose on and on and on. Or maybe there's another job that James Franklin has his eye on in the SEC, and he feels like if he's connected to Jimmy, that could enhance his chances, because Jimmy really does run the SEC. I mean, he's the super agent of our lifetime.
We're just going back. I was in school then at Tennessee, and he just so happened to be buds with Reggie White, and that's what got him started. How about that? How about timing?
Well, it's timing, but it's also a lot of work. I mean, I don't want to take anything away from Jimmy, but that's important to get a good first client and build your clientele. And more importantly, Jimmy landed the big deal for Nick Saban, where he was guaranteed he'd make more than any other coach in the country if he won a national championship at LSU. And Nick made good on it. And suddenly everybody said, man, this Jimmy Sexton guy is one ingenious agent. Can you swing a deal for me like that? And so he did.
Jeff Chu, this is a good question. Says, I know Griff in the past has talked about how unfair it is that Georgia has to go all the way to Jacksonville for this game, and Gainesville's just down the road from Florida, where they're at in the Jacksonville matchup. He says, what do you think about the SEC title game, though, being hosted in Atlanta every year, and it's just about an hour from Georgia's campus?
That's, there's a lot of things. I'll go down the list. So the biggest issue for Georgia from an immediate competition standpoint is it's one less home game that they have every 2 years. And that doesn't sound like much until you say that's 12.5%. Would you ever self-impose a 12.5% reduction again that you have against your competition? Would you say you'd spot Alabama 12.5% advantage in recruiting? You would never say you would do that. But that's effectively what you're doing by giving away your home game every other year, and what would be your biggest home game every other year. So that's number one. Number two, it's not practical anymore. When we compare it to the Red River Rivalry, Austin, Texas is about 196 miles from Arlington, or from Dallas, and Norman is 190 miles. So it truly is equidistant. Number two, the Dallas-Fort Worth metropolitan area is the fourth largest in the country. Fourth largest in the country. Jacksonville is 39th largest. It is not the lifeblood of recruiting for Georgia or Florida. A very important city, but nowhere near the Titan that Dallas-Fort Worth is. And two, it's 70 miles from Gainesville and it's 340 from Athens. A lot of people say, well, just bring the recruits to the game. Those are the people that don't know anything about football and that are really dumb. Because when a recruit comes into town, it's not really even about the game. The game is fun, but it's really about seeing the facilities. For Georgia, it's about showing off a brand new $80 million football building or a $60 million west end zone or the campus or meeting the professors, spending time with the coaching staff, watching film, hanging out with the other players. That's what bringing your parents along. That's what a recruiting weekend is about, not eating popcorn, watching football for 3 hours. So it's the concept of, oh, you just bring them to the game. No, that doesn't work. It doesn't serve your purpose. You're not going to get to spend any time with them, and you're not going to give them any sort of memorable experience. So you're essentially giving away a recruiting weekend. Two, you look at the infrastructure of the areas in Northeast Florida, Northeast Georgia. They're very different. Jacksonville has one of the best hospitals in the state of Florida, has one of the best school systems. Athens is woefully behind. Jacksonville area estimates a $35 million a year economic impact from this game. If Georgia were to take what was rightfully theirs back, their home game, every other year, you could have $15 to $20 million of economic impact that would be pumped in to the northeastern Georgia economy. Better schools, better infrastructure, better hospital, better pay, more jobs. It's huge to have an event like that. It's why Pat Dye said that they should move it to a home and home. It's why he did move Auburn and Alabama. So Jacksonville's jumped the sharp. And then just on top of it, Bill, I've been down there. And listen, you know, it's an NFL stadium. It's not a college setting. There's no beautiful college campus. There's no college town. There's parking garages, motorhomes, porta potty. You know, it's just not college football. If I wanted to go to a NASCAR event, I'd go to a NASCAR event. If I wanted to go to an NFL game, I'd go to an NFL game. So there was probably a time and a place where this meant a lot. But between that time and place and now, Georgia's decided they want to win national championships. Okay, that's what they decided. 10 wins and Mark Richt, the nice guy, wasn't enough. They want blood. They want to sit at the big boy table with Alabama. Then you better play by the same rules. And if you think Alabama would play LSU every year in New Orleans, you're crazy. They wouldn't. So don't ask, as Nick Saban would say.
Griff is with us every Tuesday from the AJC's Dog Nation. On the field of play, this matchup, Florida perhaps will play up in this game because it's Georgia. Is that your anticipation?
I mean, they should have beat Alabama. Should have beat Alabama. Scored 42 on LSU even though they had 4 picks. You know, could have, should have beat Kentucky on the road, 15 penalties against Kentucky. If Florida plays clean, and it's a big if because they haven't shown us that they can put it all together yet, but if they do, they're dynamic. I mean, they average over 500 yards of offense a game. Now, it's strength on strength. Georgia's front seven is really good, you know, but they were really good last year. And now this Florida team doesn't throw the ball around like they did last year. But they ran the ball in Georgia last year. People forget that. That was a big part of it. Now, Jordan Davis didn't play, and he's healthy. And this Georgia defense is pretty good on the front side, but they're not as good on the back. So if you're asking me if there's the potential for an upset, sure, there's potential for it. Florida's dynamic. They just haven't put it all together yet. They've had a bye week, and they've got a chance for immediate vindication. I mean, this is their season. And so I think you're right. I think we will see the best from Florida. Georgia depends on who's at quarterback. If JT's at quarterback, this offense is virtually unstoppable. If Stetson is at quarterback, you need to have a run game. You play play action, and you take a 14-7 lead at halftime against Kentucky.
And we don't know JT Daniels' availability yet, correct?
No, I think we do. You know, I think Kirby made it pretty clear that he's throwing pain-free. The media, he opened practice, which tells you something. And we saw JT taking snaps first. You know, he hasn't announced a starter. He said it would be determined by how practice went this week and the health. But he was there, you know, practice was open, and everybody saw JT was going first in the drill work ahead of Stetson. And, you know, and they were going 1, 2, 3, 4 in order. So I don't know what that means, but Kirby wanted us to see that. He chooses the periods we're in there. Coaches show you exactly what they want you to see. Why would Kirby want us to see that? Why would he want Florida to know that? So maybe Florida has to get prepared for both quarterbacks and is a little bit more stressed out with their game plan.
Georgia seems to continue to play their best ball, though. They seem like they keep peaking every game.
I don't know about that. I mean, I didn't think they looked good the first half against Kentucky. Stetson missed on some throws. They gave up a 23-play drive at the end of the game. I thought they looked like a tired team ready for a break against Kentucky. And I give Kentucky some credit. Kentucky is very efficient. I'm impressed with Kentucky football. I'm going to say it. I haven't been in the past, but I am now. I really am. And I want to see how Kentucky finishes the year. I've got Kentucky ahead of Ole Miss in my SEC power rankings. I'm not as impressed by Twitter accounts as everyone else seems to be. I remember Ole Miss getting shut out for a half against an Alabama defense that's very questionable. I mean, just look at Tennessee, right? Look, Tennessee went toe-to-toe with Alabama for three quarters in Tuscaloosa. That wasn't a mirage. They wore out because Bama controlled the ball. But you start wondering if you give Josh Heupel another recruiting class or two, this guy can obviously scheme him up because, like you said, he was toe-to-toe with Alabama. But we'll see what Georgia responds. Again, the quarterback is a big deal. I mean, it's like a jet engine versus a propeller plane when you're talking about JT and Stead. I mean, they're both – Stead's efficient. He's good. He's maneuverable. But you put JT in there, and they just take off. I mean, they just looked unstoppable with him at quarterback.
Griff's from Michigan, so I got to ask him this question. The Michigan-Michigan State game, how do you see it?
You know, I honestly don't follow those teams closely. You know, I'm pretty dialed in with Georgia and the SEC. You know, but just from what I've gathered, I mean, Mel's done a great, incredible job, really. That's why he's a candidate at LSU. It's why USC's putting out feelers for him. I mean, the fact that he's 7-0 at Michigan State, you would have never convinced me that could happen. Now, I look closer at the schedule, and I don't know who they really beat, frankly. It's not like they've beaten Ohio State or Penn State or Michigan. But still, you know, to be able to win those games and start 7-0, that's impressive. He's got the mindset there. And, you know, I think the game's in East Lansing. Pretty sure College Game Day is going to be there. It's a big advantage. It's a strength-on-strength deal. Michigan State's got a legitimate Heisman Trophy candidate. You know, it's sad that they don't get more attention from their own media up there, but this Kenneth Walker guy is unbelievable. He's transferred from Wake. I mean, I think he's second in the nation in rushing, and he's not even getting a sniff for the Heisman because, you know, the Detroit media is, you know, really favors Michigan, has for decades, the blue wall, we call it. If he played for Michigan, he was second in the country in rushing. I guarantee you there'd be a Heisman campaign, but it's a chance for Michigan State. You know, is this Michigan team any different than the other ones? I don't know. You know, I understand that they run the ball pretty well, that they can't really throw it, and that's how you would exploit Michigan State. So it's a toss-up. To me, it's a toss-up game, and it'll be entertaining. It's a fun rivalry. It's a rivalry that I loved covering and loved the Michigan State mentality. I mean, they don't apologize for that being the biggest game of the year. They don't try to tell you that they take them all the same. They come right out and tell you this is their biggest game of the year. That's part of being a Spartan, is beat Michigan. Because Michigan is an incredible global institution that's, you know, very well respected and by all rights should win every year when you look at the facilities and their proximity to Detroit and the recruiting base.
Griff, did you get to watch any of the Alabama-Tennessee game?
I did. I absolutely did. And Tennessee was exciting and dynamic. And you know, the final score didn't mean anything to me. What I wanted to see, what I wanted to gauge to find out if Tennessee was real was – how would they respond to that gut punch loss to Ole Miss? Because let me tell you, that was a gut punch. Watching those Ole Miss guys falling down all over the field, and I don't know, maybe all of them were hurt. Thank goodness that they were all healthy this week and miraculously didn't have any problems. But watching the way that game went down and some of those calls and the way Kiffin had trolled them and really drugged Tennessee fans through a lot of pain leading up to that game, and to lose at home in front of an exciting crowd, and then you got to go to Tuscaloosa, right? And how are they going to respond to that? And they responded. They came out there swinging. I said, you know what? This team, this Tennessee team now, they got some dudes. These cats ain't going out like that. And they fought Alabama toe-to-toe for three quarters. They were right there. They got to Bryce Young. That D coordinator dialed some stuff up. That offense made some plays. They weren't apologizing. They weren't going in there trying to run the clock out and keep the score. They were down there to win, man. And when you've got a mentality like that, when you've got that sort of resiliency in your locker room, that is a really, really good sign for Tennessee football. I don't know, is it Heupel? Is it the leadership in the locker room? You know, what is it? What I know is it's impressive. And so now let's see what happens next, right? Can they keep it up, right? Can they go out there and play like that every week? Because that's what great programs do. And if Tennessee can continue to show up like that and show out, good things are going to happen because you can rebuild quickly with the portal. So I was very, very impressed by Tennessee. Yeah, they wore out. Alabama had 40 minutes time of possession, of course. You know, and Alabama pouring it on in the fourth quarter trying to run up the score, right? Good for them, Nick, whatever. But we saw what happened for three quarters. And that Henry Toto kid that split on his teammates in his school when the going got tough playing for Alabama, you got to wonder what was going through his mind when his team was trailing at Alabama. And he's looking across the line, a lot of these guys that toughed it out and stuck to their commitment to Tennessee. And how does that make him look? You know, it makes me wonder a little bit. About some of the unintended consequences when kids transfer and maybe buyer's remorse.
Griff, we'll see you next Tuesday.
Appreciate it, Bill.
Mike Griffith from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution's Dog Nation. There you have it. There you have it. People tweeting about Griff left and right here. That's the point of Griff.